I'm 54. So if I didn't have hormones, this is fact, my risk of heart disease would increase. My risk of a heart attack, raised blood pressure would increase. My risk of osteoporosis, type 2 diabetes, dementia, autoimmune diseases, cancers, Parkinson's disease, non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, inflammatory bowel disease. You know, the list goes on and on. The younger a woman is when she's menopausal, the greater the risk of all those diseases.
This is Crappy to Happy, and I am your host, Cass Dunn. I'm a clinical and coaching psychologist, a mindfulness meditation teacher, and of course, author of the Crappy to Happy books. In this show, I bring you conversations with interesting, inspiring, intelligent people who are experts in their field and who have something of value to share that will help you feel less crappy and more happy. She is back. This week, I am joined again by Dr. Louise Newson for part two of Everything You Ever Wanted to Know About Hormone Therapy. In this conversation, we are talking about how to know if your hormone levels are low, whether it's dangerous to take too much, and what the risks are, as you heard, of not replacing your declining hormones as you age. Now, in the time since I last spoke to Louise, I have spoken to so many women about this topic, and there genuinely still is such a lack of information out there. Many women still have no idea that there is actually a difference between hormonal contraceptives and bioidentical hormones. And far too many women, in my personal opinion, having now spoken to Louise, are simply not aware of the fact that hormone replacement is about so much more than any symptoms that you might associate with menopause, like irregular periods or night sweats or brain fog. I just think that this is so important. We are so in the dark, and I truly hope that this information is of value and of benefit to you. And I hope that you will help to spread this super valuable information by sharing this episode, both of these episodes, with every woman that you know. Right, here is Dr. Louise Newson. Louise, welcome back to Crappy to Happy.
Oh, thank you for having me back.
I have just released our first conversation. I've had so much positive feedback already, and people shooting through their questions and their comments, just feedback about the impact that you've actually had on them, the positive benefit that they have had from the work that you have done. So I will get to that a little bit later. But the first thing I wanted to ask you today was the question that I didn't have time to get in during our last conversation, and that is, is there a blood test or some kind of diagnostic test that women can take which determines, you know, their hormone levels and whether they are a candidate for HRT?
No. Wouldn't that be nice? Well, it would be nice and not. But one of the things is that our hormones are changing all the time.
Right.
So I've seen lots of people who have a normal blood test, but they're telling me all the symptoms they're getting. And so it's not helpful. They might have had a blood test 10 minutes later and it have been abnormal. Do you see
really?
What I mean? Because
yeah.
Our hormones fluctuate. But the other thing is, when we do a blood test, we're only seeing what's in the blood. We're not seeing what's in all the tissues and organs as well. People seem to be very fixated about blood tests. And, you know, in medicine, there's lots of things we don't do blood tests for. You know, if I was trying to diagnose migraine, I don't do a blood test for that, or a brain scan. I take a really good history. So knowledge is most important, but blood tests can be useful in clinical context. So in my clinic, we do blood tests for two reasons. Firstly, it's quite useful to exclude other things, because if someone's feeling tired, could they have low iron? Could they have an underactive thyroid? So we do, and I like doing those blood tests because it gives me a picture for what's going on. And then when someone's on hormones, it can be useful as well to monitor. So as you know, when we give the hormones through the skin is a barrier. It's quite thick to get things through. So some people need different doses. So it can help guide treatment. We often do testosterone levels before starting. And, you know, I've never met a woman with a normal testosterone level.
Is that
really?
Right?
Yeah, especially with older women. But a low level doesn't mean that's the cause of the symptoms. And that's where, as a clinician, I feel very strongly that women shouldn't be self-diagnosing, self-treating, because, you know, I've worked in medicine for many, many years. So I'm quite good at asking screening questions. You know, if someone had headache and they had memory problems, have they got a brain tumour or is it their hormones? Now, even if their hormone levels were low, they could still have a brain tumour. Now, I mean, this is quite extreme,
yeah,
but I'm just trying to highlight to you what we don't want to do as doctors or educators saying, oh, yes, it's all due to your hormones.
Yeah.
It could be due to your hormones and something else as well.
Right.
And that's why in clinical context is really important for hormone levels.
Yeah. That makes sense to me as a psychologist who, you know, yeah, everything that we treat is based on presenting problem and the patient describing what they're experiencing. Yeah. There's no test for any of those things as
yeah,
well.
Yeah. And I think also one of the things which I'm sure you see in your work as well is that women often aren't believed.
Mm.
The first thing as a doctor I was really taught in medicine is listen to your patients, believe them, try and understand what's going on. You might not have the right diagnosis for them, but there's something happening. Mm. And so women often know if it's related to their hormones. The problem is that the women aren't being listened to and believed.
Yeah. Picking up also on what we talked about last time, we talked a lot about this idea of bio-identical yeah, hormones, which are the new HRT, which is very different from the old yeah, HRT. I'm curious to know, is there still a non-bio-identical version of HRT? For example, as I mentioned last time, like I have the Mirena
yes,
for the progesterone that was yeah, recommended. It's the easiest, it's the simplest, you never have to think about it.
Yeah.
You won't get periods, hopefully. So are there non-identical yeah, versions, yeah, like options?
Yeah, there are. So there are synthetic versions. There are some combination tablets. There are the combination patches that contain estrogen and a progesterone is a synthetic progestogen. And even the pregnant horse's urine estrogen is still available in some countries as well.
Is that right?
Yeah, I know. The Mirena coil is synthetic progestogen. So some people elect to take the natural progesterone as a tablet, oral capsule or a pessary, as well as having the Mirena coil
really,
to get the benefits of progesterone in their bodies. So most types now, certainly all the types that I prescribe are the natural hormones. It's taken a massive shift for people to think differently. And for many years, certainly in the UK, a lot of doctors have been quite cross that women have been asking for the patches or gels. And I was at a meeting recently and a very eminent gynecologist said, we're really not happy prescribing the estrogen and progesterone separately because women might forget to take their progesterone pill at night. And I thought, firstly, this was from a woman. And firstly, like, women aren't stupid. Secondly, lots of women like taking it at night because it helps them sleep. And thirdly, stop being so patronising to women.
How condescending.
Yeah, I know it is, isn't it?
Oh, my God. Yeah.
So they're saying give them the combination because it's easier for them.
Mm.
Well, give them a choice.
So that's interesting that it is beneficial. This is interesting to me personally. It's beneficial to take progesterone even if you have the Mirena coil.
Yeah, so lots of people, and I was taught it as well, so I feel a bit embarrassed that I didn't know it before, think the progesterone is just to protect the lining of the womb. But of course it's not. It's a hormone that's made in our brains, it's made in our tissues, it's made in our ovaries as well. And it's a very important hormone to reduce inflammation in the body, to help our brain function, our bones strong, our cardiovascular system and so forth. And some women miss it. You know, some women feel a lot calmer when they use progesterone. They sleep better, their mood is better. So this is where it's a choice. You know, some women say, oh, I feel great. I don't think I need another hormone. And other women say, well, I'm going to try it and see. And if they feel better, then they can continue with it.
And so just like there is no blood test to determine whether you need hormones, there's also no test to say whether you're on the right dose. It really comes down to, well, how do you feel in yourself?
Yeah, dosing, it can be useful to have a blood test. So say, for example, I used more than one patch. And when I started my HRT nearly 10 years ago, the one patch wasn't enough. I was feeling bad. I was not really feeling much better. I was still getting night sweats and my estradiol level was low. So then I knew I wasn't absorbing it properly. And I tried a different patch, but it didn't stick on. I tried the gel and it literally floated off my skin. So then my consultant increased my dose. So that could be quite useful. Because if I see someone who's getting symptoms and their level's normal, then I think, well, is there something else that's causing their symptoms?
Mm-hmm.
So that's why it's useful as a guide, really. But the estradiol levels and testosterone levels, progesterone can be harder to monitor, so we often don't do progesterone levels.
Yeah. You know, after our last conversation, and particularly as I listened to it back, I was thinking that when I was about maybe, I don't know, 45, 47 or something, I remember getting online and ordering these like hormone, happy hormone, I don't remember the brand name, but some kind of supplement that was meant to support me through perimenopause. And I know that a lot of women, I was thinking, gosh, so many women were all about these supplements because they're natural. And there's this mindset that natural is better than using a drug, which just now, having talked to you, seems insane.
It is insane, isn't it? You can argue, like, how do you define natural? What does it mean? Because anything, whether it's a supplement or a prescription that I prescribe, is still being made, hasn't it? It's the only natural thing is if you're eating plants that are, you know, or herbs, if you see what I mean. And so then people get very concerned that somehow, because it's on a prescription, it's not natural. Whereas there's lots of things in a health food shop that I would never touch or maybe not need. And there's lots of things that I prescribe that are not nearly so natural as the hormones that I prescribe. And so we also need to think, like I've just said, in the past, the estrogen was made from pregnant horses' urine. Now, pregnant horses' urine is natural, but it's not natural for us as humans to have. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, I do.
And there are plants in my garden that are natural. I wouldn't want to have them. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so then what we need to be thinking of, well, what is, you know, what's happening in our bodies? Well, our hormone levels are reducing. So it's more natural to just top up those hormones than to take something else. And people might need to take vitamins or supplements to help the way the hormones are metabolized or to help our bone strength or our heart function. But we shouldn't be taking them instead of hormones. And that's the problem. It's the marketing of them that is very misleading. And the problem is that, you know, women are let down by medicine often. They're let down by doctors saying you don't need or you can't have hormones. So they're desperate for help. And these people often have a lot of marketing budgets. So they look great. Some of them are the most beautiful packaging. And you sort of think, oh, maybe I'll feel better. So I understand why people take them, but we have to be thinking about the evidence and what there is.
Yeah. And I think, you know, when there was that mindset, which still persists, I know, that it was dangerous and that it caused breast cancer, that's when women were scared off of HRT and therefore looking for these supplements as well. And I was curious to know, like, whether there is a role for them even alongside.
Yeah. So no, I did a YouTube recently about supplements. I kept it quite basic. But, you know, as a rule of thumb, if it's got the word menopause on the label, then don't take it.
Really?
Yeah, because it will be a marketing thing. So, you know, I take some supplements, but it's for my future health, not because I'm menopausal.
Good note. If it says menopause, it's probably overpriced and it's a marketing scheme. Is there any risk, given that there's no blood test, is there a risk of taking too much of something? Is there a consequence of having too much estrogen or too much progesterone, for example?
If we're giving our natural hormones, then no, not really. Just to sort of compare, really, you know, the levels that we work for, usually in the clinic, are between 250 and 1,000. When women are pregnant, their level's about 55,000. It's a massive difference, massive difference. We're also talking about natural hormones. People sometimes get confused because with the contraceptive pill, for example, when it was first launched in the 60s, the doses were very high and it caused all sorts of side effects and problems and health problems as well. And the dose was lowered. But that's a chemical. It's been synthetically altered. You know, people worry, you know, what about if you have too much insulin? Of course, it can cause problems. But we're not giving mega doses. If you compare the doses that we give compared to, say, the synthetic hormones and contraception, it's significantly lower. Even the higher off-label doses are still lower than contraception, and they're natural. So, you know, but also when we give higher doses, it's because we want to get it through the skin. We're not giving it as an intravenous infusion to get high levels in the body.
Right.
And also, you know, I've done levels of women who aren't on hormones who are perimenopausal, and their levels of estradiol are like 4,000 or 5,000 just because their body's like doing all this yo-yoing. So we don't know what the best level is for each person. Because we're all different.
Yeah.
But it no, we're not giving mega doses, so it's be very unlikely. The big problem is a lot of women aren't having enough, or they're not having any.
Yeah.
Most women globally are having no hormones at all.
Which leads me to, what's the consequence of not having hormones?
It's a great question, because I think we need to be thinking about this more. Mm. Like, for years, what if we have hormones? What about breast cancer? What about, what about? Mm. Actually, let's think. So I'm 54. If I'm clearly menopausal. So if I didn't have hormones, this is fact, you know, my risk of heart disease would increase. My risk of a heart attack, raised blood pressure would increase. My risk of osteoporosis, type 2 diabetes, dementia, autoimmune diseases, cancers, Parkinson's disease, non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, inflammatory bowel disease. You know, the list goes on and on, because my body would go from being a sort of hopefully neutral anti-inflammatory state to pro-inflammatory.
Mm.
Now, of course, I can mitigate some of those risks by nutrition and exercise and maybe the odd supplement, but it's still going to be switched on, because we need those hormones to help our immune cells to work well. So we know that. We've known it for many, many years. You know, the younger a woman is when she's menopausal, the greater the risk of all those diseases. But also mental health, you know, there's a risk, increased risk of depression, increased risk of psychosis, increased risk of drug addiction.
Wow.
A lot of people turn to alcohol and drugs. So we can't just be thinking about diseases, but also there's increased risk that, you know, you'd lose your job. I wouldn't be able to work as a doctor if I wasn't taking hormones.
Mm.
I just wasn't safe to practice without a memory. So, and people do, you know, we know at least 10% of women give up their jobs.
Wow.
And give up their relationships as well.
Wow.
So, you know, that's where some people will be fine, and we've all met them, and some of them are very vocal on social media to say, people are fine, I'm fine, look at me. Yeah, that's fine. Yes, you are. But I see and I hear from thousands of women, as you do, who aren't fine and they're struggling and they want hormones, which are first line treatment in all guidelines.
Yeah. I think that is such important information for women to hear and understand, that risk of not taking it, because that's not out there at all.
No, it's not, because we've been sidelined, we've been gaslit, we've been, you know, misrepresented. And it's, you know, I don't care whether, I know I should care more, but I don't care whether women take hormones or not. I don't care whether they exercise or not. You know, this morning I really wanted a bit of a lie-in because I went to bed, fell too late last night, but I got up, I did yoga before I, you know, had a shower, and I do it most mornings, you know, but it's my choice. I don't care, no disrespect, if you exercise or not, but I think you should know that exercising is really good for your physical and mental health.
Mm.
And if you don't do it, that's fine. Your physical and mental health might be okay, but it also might not be. And that's all this is about hormones, but it becomes very polarized and a bit toxic. And I don't really know why, to be honest.
Yeah. Getting back to the synthetic hormones.
Yeah.
So the other thing that occurred to me was that young women, as soon as they get their periods, if they're having heavy periods, they're having, I don't know, skin problems, all sorts of issues, typically they have been prescribed the pill.
Yeah.
To
I know.
Even things out, smooth things out, reduce these symptoms. Given what...
I know.
Given...
It makes you think, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It really does. So outside of menopause and perimenopause, is there a role that these hormones, these bioidentical hormones, should be playing with these younger women?
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
Is it a danger that we're putting all these young women
on? So there's a danger. There is, because it's well reported that there are risks with the synthetic contraceptives. Don't get me wrong, they're good as contraception. We know that they're effective because they stop ovulation. But let's think two things, really. If you stop ovulation, you're stopping your own hormones, aren't you? You're giving yourself a chemical menopause, because those own hormones will go because you're not having ovulation.
Right.
So the contraceptives will stop your own hormones working, but they'll also, they're chemicals, they've been chemically altered. So they're not going to have the effects, the beneficial effects to our health in the same way. And we know that because there are risks, and they're small risks, but they're still there. So we know the contraceptives have a risk of clot and stroke and heart attacks and breast cancer, but it's small. But that's where I feel that we should be educating people. You know, I've got three daughters, and my oldest daughter takes hormones, but she takes natural hormones because she has PMDD. So she has a drop in her mood before her periods. So she has transdermal estradiol. She has, you know, natural hormones and natural progesterone. And that's fine because it's her choice. She uses different type of contraception. But somehow it's like it's not just for contraception that, you know, contraception is given. And I did a podcast with my 20-year-old daughter Sophie talking about it. And she's saying, yeah, mommy, people just go on birth control to control their hormones. But often then they feel really flat and joyless. And then they're given antidepressants and then they put on weight and then they're not exercising. And, you know, we know there's a mental health crisis out there. And how much is related to women being having this sort of chemical menopause from their contraceptives?
Yeah.
Like no one's really thinking about it in the same way.
If we can't get a lot of GPs out there to be willing to prescribe bioidentical hormones for women in menopause, how likely are we to get them to prescribe them for younger women for PMDD?
Yeah, it's really hard. I've got a patient who's 26 and she's had really bad PMDD for many years. She's like housebound for 3 days a month because she has really dark, deep thoughts. She can't go to work. And she'd tried different contraceptives. It hadn't worked for her. She was even given olanzapine by a psychiatrist, which is heavy duty medication. And that made her feel dreadful. She was too scared to tell the psychiatrist she'd stop, but she did. And anyway, I saw her and I just gave her some progesterone, some natural body identical progesterone, just for those 3 or 4 days a month. And she came back after 3 months and said, wow, I didn't even know it was legal to feel this good. And she said, I've gone back to work, you know, I feel great. So I said, oh, can you get it from your GP now? Because she didn't really want to come and pay for it for me. And she said, no, I went to see my GP and they said, no, we can't, but we can give you other synthetic hormones. And that's really sad because this isn't expensive medicine. It's very simplistic medicine, actually. And it's transforming her life and it makes sense because all I'm doing is topping up, you know, that graph where the progesterone goes down. So, but when I've spoken to some of my friends, I was speaking to a GP colleague last week, telling him about the synthetic and he was like, oh, Louise, you've lost me now. I don't understand. And I'm like, well, it's not difficult. My 14-year-old understands. You know, it's basic chemistry, really. But it's hard because, you know, once you told something, it must be hard when they realise the earth was round and trying to convert people, you know, and it feels a bit like that.
Yeah. I just want to quickly share with you. So a friend of mine who is also Australian, but she lives in London. So she listened to your podcast, you know, she's seen your information. So she twigged that her issues were probably to do with hormones. She was having anxiety, she was having panic attacks that she'd never had before. And so she thought, I'll go back and see my GP in Australia because, you know, she's more comfortable with her own medical kind of system. And she saw the GP and said she asked specifically for estradiol and the natural progesterone. And the GP said no, that she would be putting her, she recommended that she would go onto some anti-anxiety medication or some SSRI or something. So my friend stood her ground and said, no, I really want to take the hormones. And so then the GP said, I'm going to put you on the pill. I don't know why. But so to her credit, she stood her ground and eventually the GP prescribed what she asked for. And she said to me, the most infuriating thing was while the GP is like tapping away at the prescription, she happened to say in passing, oh, this is what I'm on.
Oh, no.
The GP said, this is what I'm on.
So why couldn't she give it?
But for some reason went through all of this rigmarole before she would prescribe it for my friend. Anyway, I'm conscious of the time, but she had some other questions actually because she said she was told she got the estradiol, but she said that she was told because she has anxiety that she should take continuous progesterone. She should take it all through the month, whereas some women are told to take it half the month. And she was told to take it until 2 days before her period, but her periods aren't that regular. So she's all confused about, well, how? And so she was wanting to know, like, should she be taking it all month? Is there a risk if she doesn't stop it 2 days before her period?
No. So when we start HRT, if people are still having their periods, we often recommend the progesterone for 2 out of 4 weeks just because the womb can respond to changing hormone levels. And when people are perimenopausal, they've got their endogenous, their internal hormones as well. So it just makes, it's just easier. So hopefully bleeding becomes more regular when people take it for 2 out of 4 weeks. But quite quickly, I usually convert people to one a night. for two reasons. Firstly, because most of us don't really want to have periods. There's a few women that like periods, but most of us just go, do you know what? The sooner they go, the better. But secondly, our bodies like everything the same. And a lot of women say they, you know, they feel different on the 2 weeks on and 2 weeks off. And it's harder to remember. So just taking one at night is easier. So often people then change after a few months. If then they get troublesome bleeding, then I'll say, well, go back to the two out of, you know, 4 weeks for a few more months until your own body's hormones sort of calm down a bit. And then you might find it easier. So there isn't any sort of big scientific reason why they can't have, why women can't have one every night.
Right. Good to know.
Yeah.
And she thanks you for your work.
Thank you.
And the other question that I got from somebody that I know was, in normal cycles, menstrual cycles, women who experience PMS, PMDD, for example, it's often cyclical, like it's certain times of the month. With perimenopause and the symptoms we experience with that, is there any cyclical nature to that, or is it just pretty much
can be completely chaos?
That's what I thought, but I thought
Some people have had PMDD, you know, the symptoms are very similar and they do often get worse before a period, but periods can be quite chaotic or they might not be happening. So often people find their symptoms are worse and last for longer, but they're very similar in nature. But, you know, a lot of people, doctors and women, spend a lot of time thinking, is it PMDD? Is it perimenopause? What is it? Like, it doesn't matter the label. The thing is, it's related to changing hormones.
Yeah.
And having those hormones back at the right dose and type can make a big difference.
And last question, what advice do you have for women who, like my friend, get resistance from a GP? When they go in, they know what they want, they ask for it. How do you suggest that they advocate for themselves? Yeah.
I think if it's really you're not winning, just go and see someone else,
right?
Because I think it's so hard. But the other thing is thinking about saying to the doctor, there are risks to my future health of me not having these hormones, and I'm a patient advocating for myself. Can you just maybe document why you're refusing, or maybe write down the reasons for your refusing? Because all guidelines in the UK globally say that hormones should be given first line. So I would just sort of spin it and say, you know, could you just explain to me the reasons? And like, if your friend's been given or offered an antidepressant, there are risks with antidepressants.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's difficult, but I think just maybe challenge a little bit in a nice way. If you're not getting anywhere, just don't waste that person's time and go and see someone else.
Yeah. Louise, I really appreciate the work that you have done. You've educated me. You've educated so many people.
You.
The feedback is obviously, it's phenomenal. And I know you get pushback and you get some criticism from certain corners, but I really appreciate that you continue to do the work that you do.
Oh, thank you very much. Thank you.
Crabby to Happy is created and produced by me, Cass Dunn. If you enjoy the show, please hit the follow button wherever you listen to ensure you never miss an episode. Share with a friend to get me into the ears of more lovely listeners, and I would love for you to leave a 5-star rating and review. Thank you so much for being here, and I cannot wait to catch you next week for another fabulous episode of Crabby to Happy.